Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Coming up on the program, South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has announced that elections scheduled for next year will not take place as planned.
I think it's much too early to talk about elections. I think there needs to be a solid discussion on a process to get out of this nightmare and to stop the atrocities.
Nigeria says it is considering its options after Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau said he would swap more than 200 schoolgirls being held hostage for jailed Islamist militants.
I think if the government will engage in dialogue with them on how to go about exchanging the prisoners with the girl, I think it's the right decision.
These stories and more to come in this edition of Africa Link, straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. Stay tuned.
Top story.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has announced that elections scheduled for next year will not take place as planned, but his rival Riek Machar said the vote should go ahead. The new development comes amid fresh battles between government forces and the rebels, breaking a new ceasefire deal signed on Friday last week and dashing hopes to a swift end to 5 months of brutal civil war. Both sides accused each other for a second day of attacking the other. Earlier, I spoke to Peter Schumann, a former director of the UN mission in southern Sudan, on the latest ceasefire violation.
Well, I do hope that we're not going into another sort of legacy of dishonored agreements. Unfortunately, the signs are not very promising. Let me recall, we had a number of high-ranking international visitors to Juba. The Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, John Kerry, others had gone there. So there must have been tremendous pressure on the leadership in Juba to sign. There are also sort of some reports about the pressure coming from the Ethiopian Prime Minister while both of them were present during their stay in Addis. So my point is that we do not really have a genuine negotiation between the conflict parties, but we have again an agreement imposed more through outside force than a recognition by the leaders that atrocities must stop, fighting must stop. If I look at the pictures from the signing ceremony, if I look at the video clips, the photos, I see two men with a very uncommitted, hostile body language, which does not really signal trust.
President Salva Kiir has been quoted by Kenya's Daily Nation newspaper as saying he signed the agreement under duress after threats of arrest were made by the Ethiopian Prime Minister if he didn't. How will future peace talks go if those meetings are threatened with jail?
Well, I'm a little skeptical. No? I have seen different descriptions, also the speech Salva Kiir gave upon his return to Juba, where, you know, he said it was sort of more of a joke, but then, you know, there's always some truth to a joke. I think it confirms what I have said before, that a deal was made under immense external pressure, where I think both leaders may have sort of resigned to reality that this will not really last, because both of them also have a lot of internal pressures from their own supporters, from other groups who I think are still more committed to fighting than to a political process, to a political solution.
President Salva Kiir has now postponed general elections that were initially scheduled to take place next year. Is this another setback for the peace process?
You know, elections are sort of the final step in a peace process. Normally, we have sort of, as external actors, put too much pressure on early elections, and then we were faced with sort of the shambles of implementing the result. I think it's much too early to talk about elections. I think now it needs a good discussion about a process, not sort of the discussion about which model of government fits better, a prime minister or a president or whatever. No, I think there needs to be a solid discussion with all the different groups in the deeply divided society of South Sudan on a process to get out of this nightmare and to stop the atrocities.
I was speaking to Peter Schumann, a former director of the UN mission in southern Sudan. Now, the conflict in South Sudan has killed thousands and displaced over 1 million people. Many of them have flocked into neighboring Ethiopia, and many continue to flee from the violence. Benno Mukla caught up with some of the fleeing refugees and filed this report on board a boat making its way from South Sudan to Ethiopia.
Koat Chot Jok sits on a boat on the Pibor River, which separates Ethiopia and South Sudan over a stretch of almost 160 kilometers. With no road connections, the boat is the only way to leave the remote area where Koat had arrived after fleeing from his home city, Bor. The 16-year-old boy is among 400 people on their way to a new refugee camp in Ethiopia as part of a mission by the International Organization for Migration. Koat, who is from the Nuer ethnic group that largely supports rebel leader Riek Machar, fled Bor with two of his older brothers. The eldest one is still in South Sudan, he says. His mother was wounded in the fighting and is sheltering at a UN refugee camp in Juba. His father was killed.
He was shot in front of me. I was alone.
After 8 hours on the boat, Koat spends a night at a makeshift camp. The following day, he sits on a bus that takes him to Lechor, one of the new refugee camps built by the Ethiopian government. He says he's happy to be finally safe, but he is still worried about his older brother back in South Sudan. Once he knows he is safe, Koat says his mind will be free. In Ethiopia, Koat hopes to finish his education. After that, he wants to return to South Sudan and become a lawyer so that he can contribute to democracy and justice. He may, however, stay in Ethiopia much longer, judging from the residents still living at Punyido, an old refugee camp located 70 kilometers from the border to South Sudan. Tesloach Tot Riat is 16 years old, same age like Koat. However, Tesloach was born and raised in Punyido, a settlement that was first opened in 1988 when Sudan was in conflict and has become a permanent settlement in Ethiopia. About 44,000 refugees live here today. Tesloach's mother came here in the 1990s, running away from fighting in southern Sudan. He lives in a thatched mud hut that he shares with a friend. Tesloach says he identifies himself more with his country of refuge, but hasn't abandoned his homeland.
Because I am here, I feel as an Ethiopian. Whenever I return back, I will feel as a Southern Sudanese.
Tesloach dreams of becoming a football star on the national team of his country, South Sudan. When he doesn't play football, he studies. According to the United Nations, 110,000 South Sudanese have sought refuge in Ethiopia. The Ethiopian government is struggling to accommodate an increasing number of new arrivals. It has built 3 new camps. 2 are already full. 1 will be very soon. And they are working on building a 4th refugee camp.
Benno Mukla reporting aboard a boat filled with South Sudanese fleeing the conflict into neighboring Ethiopia.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
Nigeria says it is considering its options set out by Boko Haram leader for the release of more than 200 schoolgirls held hostage by the Islamists. In a new video released on Monday, the group's leader, Abubakar Shekau, said the girls may be released once Nigeria frees all Boko Haram prisoners it has in custody. The government rejected that proposal and said it was not interested in any conditions dictated by the extremists who have killed thousands in a 5-year uprising and claimed the shocking April 14th mass abduction of schoolgirls in the northeastern town of Chibok, Borno State. From northern Nigeria, Muhammad Alamin sent this report.
The 17-minute video released by Boko Haram shows leader Abubakar Shekau in the military attires. About 130 girls can be seen sitting in a scrubbed lawn, wearing full-length hijab and reciting the first chapter of the Muslim's holy book, the Quran. Shekau, who spoke in Arabic and Hausa languages, said he was really shocked by the outrage around the world over the abductions. Making references of the planned intervention by Western powers, Shekau vowed that no forces will be able to trace his whereabouts to rescue the girls. He did make one sterling demand. He said his group will be willing to exchange the schoolgirls with many of his members, including men and women, being held in various detention centers across Nigeria. Some of the missing schoolgirls' parents expressed joy their children are alive, but call on the Nigerian government to comply with the group's demand.
I was happy when I saw them because some time ago we were thinking that probably most of them is dead. But being that we saw the video cassette today, we are grateful, we are happy. And we believe that they didn't mean to hurt Chibok. My daughter is among them. If I will advise the government, I would love let them compile with the Boko Haram and let them release their members and let them release the daughters of our people.
In light of the video's release and the demand made by Boko Haram to swap the abducted girls, Nigerian government said it will be reviewing all options. Political analyst Abdulkadir Saleh said the short video is a welcome development.
It's a good development because in any conflict there is what we call prisoner exchange and dialogue on it. I think if the government will engage in dialogue with them on how to go about exchanging the prisoners with the girl, I think it's a right decision. Because it is for the first time they offered such a chance. I think the government should capitalize on the chance and go beyond even prisoners' exchange and dialogue the matter for a lasting peace solution for Nigeria.
Muhammad Alamin filed that report from Northern Nigeria. With only a month left until the start of the World Cup in Brazil, there is growing speculation about the performance of the five national African teams. DW Africa's Christian Vieira went to find out about the possibilities of Algeria, Cameroon, Ghana, Ivory Coast, and Nigeria reaching at least the semifinals.
Five African national teams will represent the continent at the World Cup in Brazil. According to football specialists, the teams will have to fight hard to make it past the group phase. Cameroon will be the first team to kick off the African World Cup campaign as they take on Mexico in the second match of the tournament. Cameroon was drafted in Group A alongside host Brazil. Croatia completes the tricky group. For the German trainer Otto Pfister, a specialist in African football, not only are Brazil and Mexico stronger opponents, but the Cameroonian team is also weaker technically.
They have this top star, Samuel Eto'o, who is now at Chelsea, but they have a generational problem. 4 years ago, they had four or five top players, like the goalkeeper Carlos Carmini, the Achille Emana and Rigobert Song, who were still top 3 or 4 years ago, but they are now too old to play. They need to bring in young players who have not yet played at this level.
Four times Africa Cup of Nations champions, Ghana is considered the strongest African team at the World Cup 2014. The Black Stars went as far as at the quarterfinal during the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. In Group C, Colombia, Greece and Japan will square it out with Ivory Coast. Nicknamed the Elephants, Ivory Coast boasts some of the greatest individual African talents. Nevertheless, they too have to overcome some challenges.
They also have a generational problem. Four or five of their players are past their peak forms. Despite of what seems light on paper, it will be very difficult for the Ivory Coast.
The Super Eagles of Nigeria won the African Cup of Nations in 2013. They play against Argentina, Iran and Bosnia and Herzegovina in the group phase. Nigeria is seen as the team with the biggest chance to go to the next round. Last but not least is Algeria. The North Africans have won the African Cup of Nations once in 1990. The team did qualify for the World Cup 2010, but did not go further than the group phase. No matter what experts on football may predict, all African teams have the same objective at the World Cup 2014 in Brazil, says Otto Pfister.
Everyone expects them to do something there because no African team has ever reached the semi-finals. This is the biggest target. Whether that is possible is another question.
Christian Vieira filed that report.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Learning by Ear. This is the third episode of our ongoing radio drama, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Linda had a challenging interview at the embassy, but luckily, she succeeded in getting a visa. She was surprised to learn that her father had already bought her plane ticket. She's due to leave this coming weekend. Her boyfriend, Chivasi, seemed to have come to terms with her departure. He spoke to her on the phone and accepted an invitation for supper with Linda and her parents. Meanwhile, on the North African coast, Farahani has come up with a plan to sneak into Europe undetected by border guards, and Sule has reluctantly agreed to join him on this adventure. So what's in store today? Sit down, relax, and enjoy today's episode called The Lucky and the Unlucky. It's dawn in North Africa, and the sun is slowly rising. Farahani and Sule are already up and preparing for their journey.
Sule, hurry up. Our contact is waiting in the car outside. We are late.
I can't find my money, Farahani. Huh? Have you seen my wallet? I can't pay for the car journey if I don't find my wallet.
Well, where did you put it? Hurry, Sule. You know that for these people, timing is everything.
I had it here somewhere, but now I can't find it. Farahani, please, will you pay for me? Once we get to Europe, I'll pay you back.
Sule, what do you take me for? A fool? I've been waiting for this day all my life, and here you are trying to ruin everything for me.
Farahani, come on. We are friends. We are more like brothers, really. Please, help me, eh? And in a few months, I'll pay you back your money.
Sule, I can't help you. The money I have is only just enough for me. The transport fee has gone up even for people who live near the coast. We are supposed to pay about 1,000 euros each. That's all I have. I'm sorry, brother. I'll have to leave you behind.
No, please, Farahani, please. Talk to the driver. He will understand.
Oh, don't worry, Sule. Just pray for a safe and successful journey for me and the others. Once we get to Europe and things work out over there, I will send for you. Goodbye, Sule, my friend. Bye.
Farahani, please, don't leave me.
Hey, wait for me. Hey, wait for me. Wait for me.
The sight of Farahani chasing after the pickup van full of migrants made Sule bust out laughing. But Farahani isn't just chasing a van. He's chasing his dream, his ticket to Europe. Will he catch up with them and proceed on his journey? Keep listening to find out. Later that day, on the other side of the continent, Chivasi is standing at the front door of the Maraga family house, an invited guest, to say farewell to Linda as she prepares to fly to Europe for her studies.
That must be Chivasi. The dog never liked him.
That dog is not the only one. Your mother doesn't like Chivasi either. I hope she doesn't hear me from the kitchen.
I know, Dad. Come on, let me open the door for him. Spotty, stop that. Stop it.
Excuse me. Is this the home of one Linda Maraga?
No, I'm sorry, young man. I think you must be lost.
You're right, young lady. I really am lost without her.
I think she's lost without you, too. Come in. My parents are waiting.
Good evening, Mr. Maraga.
Aha. Hello, Chivasi. Oh, come on in. Darling, we are all here.
Oh, hi, Chivasi. Okay, it's all service now, so please help yourself.
Everything smells so good.
Chivasi, what are your plans?
Well, I don't really have a plan at the moment. I've only just finished university.
Jesus, don't you want to continue with your studies?
Can we talk about something else, please?
Sure, Mrs. Maraga. I'd love to. It's just that right now, it's just not possible for me. You know, my parents can't afford it, and my other brothers and sisters are still at school. So I need to get a job quickly to help support my parents and family.
Chivasi is coming with us to the airport to see me off.
Oh, is he?
Oh, am I?
Oh, sure, why not? You're like family to us, Chivasi.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you, Mr. Maraga.
And as soon as I finish my studies and come home, we intend to get married.
Chivasi almost choked when he heard those words, not to mention Linda's parents. But their surprise soon turned into joy. After a few days of anxiety and anticipation, the time came for Linda to leave. At the airport, She was surrounded by her parents, relatives, friends, classmates, and of course, Chivasi. But before we see her off, let's find out how Farahani is coping after missing his chance to migrate to Europe. He hasn't seen Sule since that day, but they're about to bump into each other in a cyber cafe.
Internet, please.
How long?
Half an hour.
Computer number 3, on the left. You have to pay first.
Farahani,
is that you? I'm so sorry about...
Not now, Sule. Let's talk when I've finished.
But you're not mad at me, are you?
No, I'm not. Everything happens for a reason. Maybe it just wasn't the right time.
That's true. I never thought of it in that way. Maybe I was acting as your guardian angel.
Okay, guardian angel. Wait here. I'll be right back.
Some people are lucky enough to be born in wealthy families or moderately well-off ones like Linda's. But some, like Chivasi, are not. And for others, like Farahani and Sule, life is even harder. One option is to go where life seems better. Farahani has wasted no time in setting up another trip. His contacts are human traffickers who are willing to ferry anyone to Europe illegally for a prize. Meanwhile, Linda is sitting tightly buckled into her plane seat. Next to her is Florence, a 30-something lady married to a European, who's flying back to Europe after visiting her family.
Welcome on board our flight number 7896. My name is Captain Smith. The plane is now ready for takeoff, so please fasten your seatbelts and bring your seat into an upright position. Cabin crew, please take your seats and get ready for takeoff.
Is this the first time you've flown?
Yes, this is my first time.
Oh, don't worry, you'll enjoy it. I'm Florence, by the way, but you can call me Flo.
Hi. My name is Linda. Linda Maraga.
Pleasure to meet you, Linda. So I imagine you're going to see a boyfriend, maybe?
No. I just said goodbye to my boyfriend at the airport. I'm going to Europe to continue my studies.
Wow, that's wonderful. I mean, your studies, not the boyfriend thing. I'm sure it must be hard for you both.
Yes, it is. But we're going to get married when I finish my studies.
And when exactly do you finish?
In 3 years' time. I'm studying international law.
3 years? Okay. You know what? Mm-hmm. I like you. And because I like you, I'm going to give you my number. If you need anything, you know, if you just want to hang out with your own people, you give me a call, okay?
Thank you very much, Flo. I really appreciate it.
Don't mention it. Enjoy the flight, Linda.
And as Linda's plane takes off into the African skies on its way to Europe, we end this third episode of our Learning by Ear series on migration from Africa to Europe. Linda seems to have warmed to Florence, but is this friendly woman really someone she can trust? What awaits Linda when she arrives in Europe? Back at home, how will Chivasi cope with his girlfriend's departure? In North Africa, what does Farahani plan to do after failing to make it with the rest of the illegal migrants? All this and more in our next episode. Join us in our online discussion at facebook.com/dw.lbe to discuss the emotional side of having to say goodbye to a family member, a person you love, or friends who have migrated. You can also listen to this episode and others in the series by visiting our homepage at dw.de/destinationeurope. Until next time, goodbye.
And now a reminder of the stories that we've covered for you. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has announced that elections scheduled for next year will not take place as planned. Nigeria is assessing all options after Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau said he would release more than 200 schoolgirls held hostage if the government agrees to free Islamist militants. We've also been hearing about the prospects of African football teams making it to the last round of the World Cup in Brazil next month. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. For comments on the stories, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +491609575910. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time, and I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany, saying, take care.